Blog Talk Radio.
Hour for Thursday, December 8th, 2011. And tonight we will purify the air after our Necronomicon show with a discussion of the Golden Dawn and Regardi's Middle Pillar ritual. Now we'll trace its origin back to Dr. Falcon's Stella Matutina, that's the second generation Golden Dawn, in the early 1920s. And then we'll talk about Regardi's expanded meditational version published in 1932. We'll mention the 1991 edited version, and we'll compare it to the original, and we will compare this sphere-based system in the middle pillar to Paul Case's chakra system, which he based on the Golden Dawn's path attributes. I'll make sure we understand the difference between those two systems. The middle pillar was the inspiration for our 1970s Hermetic Caduceus, which is a fully developed Sephirotic chakra system based upon the lightning flash upon the Tree of Life. So, tune in and let's bring down the light. And when I say the light, I mean capital T-H-E, capital L-I-G-H-T, the light. Now, I can't overemphasize the importance of the middle pillar in modern Western Hermetic magic. This is probably, I would say, one of the most important, like the pentagram ritual. It's one of those, rituals that is a core ritual. It's one of those rituals that you would do in one form or another, and you should do it almost on a daily basis. Now, it is, of course, a Western form of yoga, and it is a Western form of chakra yoga. And not only is it a Western form of chakra yoga, or tantric yoga, it is also very, very, very effective. And I want to discuss how this got started. And those of you who have worked it before and know about it, read about it before, You may learn a few things, hopefully. You may learn a few things tonight you didn't know before about this. And so, let's talk about how it got started. Now, there is nothing about the middle pillar exercise, nothing about it or the lightning flash in the Cypher manuscript. Well, nothing about it in the Cypher manuscript at all. In fact, there was nothing about it, or the lightning flash, in the original Golden Dawn. You know, the 1987 Golden Dawn that Mathers and Westcott and Woodman put together. Either the Outer Order or the Inner Order, there was nothing about this middle pillar exercise. And nothing about the lightning flash version of the power coming down the Tree of Life. This was a inspiration and a creation of, as far as we can tell, Dr. Falcon, who reconstituted the Golden Dawn after the 1904 scandal and mess and everything that upset the Golden Dawn. And so when the Golden Dawn was reformed after that, it became known as the Stella Matutina. This was the Golden Dawn that got going in the early 1920s. This was the Golden Dawn that spread out to New Zealand and spread out to Australia and as it went to the United States. Well, it was already, the original Golden Dawn was in the United States already, but the Stella Matutina was the Golden Dawn that became international. And it's the one, by the way, that Rigardi published in the 1930s. As the Stella Matutina scripts, the Stella Matutina knowledge lectures. So this is second generation, and it is very much influenced by Dr. Falcon, who was a genius in his own right. So we are virtually certain, and I'm essentially quoting Rigardi on this. We're certain that this middle pillar thing exercise. Came about in the Falcon era, and that's where it originated. And also, too, the lightning flash apparently seems to be from that era. Now, what is it that the middle pillar does? Well, the middle pillar brings down celestial light from Kether, which is above the head, placed above the head. In other words, what we're doing is we're putting the spheres of the Tree of Life on the human body. Now remember the Tree of Life, of course, has three pillars, and it has 10 spheres, and it has three pillars. There's a pillar on the right side, a pillar on the left side. And, of course, there's a pillar right down the middle. So what is being done here is Kether is being placed above the head, and then Tiphereth, of course, is in the chest. And this puts Yesod in the genital region. And then they placed Malkuth down at the feet. Well, originally, the middle pillar was kind of based on the idea, by the way, the lightning flash scroll is from Theoricus, 2 = 9, but you don't get into the middle pillar exercise in the Stella Matutina scripts until the fifth degree knowledge lecture. Now, just to kind of split hairs a little bit here, but the idea here originally was to place the candidate, just like we do in masonry. We place the candidate between the two pillars, Shachin and Boaz. Well, in the Golden Dawn, you place the candidate between the two pillars with the Egyptian glyphs on them. And that's the pillar of mercy and the pillar of severity. So you can say that the other spheres, and they did kind of indicate this, that the other spheres might be said to be on those pillars on either side, and the middle pillar was in the candidate. Or you can also take the interpretation that those other spheres on the pillar of severity, the pillar of mercy, are on the shoulders, and they go down the side. And that's the usual interpretation. So because the structure of the Tree of Life is set up on this three-pillar or the three-axis structure here. And because the Golden Dawn was going to remain traditional in this respect, the middle pillar exercise concentrated only on the five centers down the middle pillar. And one of them was Da'af, and that was placed in the throat. And then they would come down from Kether, Da'af, Tiphereth, Yesod, and down to Tiphereth and the feet. And then you would bring the power back up. And what this was a a different, completely different. Now, this is very important that you realize this. This was completely different than the Eastern Hindu interpretation. Completely different. And in that interpretation of the psychic centers, you have 7 to 10 centers running up and down the spine like this. But in the Eastern version of this operation, the power is brought up from the Kundalini, which is in the perineum, which is you're sitting on it, and you awaken the Kundalini, the snake. And that sends the power up the spine, and you're drawing the power of the universe, analogous to the light from Kether, by breathing prana. That's their way of absorbing the power of the universe, which is a very good idea, because prana is, a mystical essence of spiritual power, and the sun and the celestial power is in the prana. So in the Eastern system, you're breathing in the prana and filling yourself with this, but you're bringing the energy up from the bottom all the way up to the top. Now, in the Western system, however, which is that metal pillar idea, you bring the celestial power down through the crown all the way down to the bottom, which in this case was the feet, and then back on up. Completely different axis of operation here. Now, let me point out that this middle pillar concept is intrinsically Western. It is basically Western, because in Western esoteric philosophy, and I'm not talking magic now, I'm talking Hermetic philosophy and Platonic, Neoplatonic and Gnostic philosophy and whatever. In this basic Western ancient philosophy, Orphic too, you go on up through the planets. You go up from Malkuth, up from the moon, up to Mercury, up to Venus, and up to all the way up through the Hermetic planets, all the way up to Saturn. And then that's where you transcend and go into the celestial sphere, starting from there. This is the classic Western ascension of the spheres. Now, this is not the Eastern setup at all. The Eastern setup is completely different. So what the middle pillar does is essentially it validates the Western ascension of the spheres, and it is a distinctly a Western approach. Now, something that I think that is necessary to understand here is that we've had, previous to this, we've had some indications of, this Western philosophy. Johann Gitchell published a sketch of this system in the order that I'm describing it, way back in the early 17th century, and he published this thing. And so we've been aware of this Western sequence for quite a while. Rudolf Steiner also believes in this Western sequence, and he's been pretty much the same way. So this is not something that Falcon came up with without some previous basis. However, it does not, it just does not match the Hindu system. And viva la difference. Anyway, there wasn't that much in Falcon's original, besides just an instruction to do this, and and to bring it down and manifest it. I want to read you a little bit from a script here. That this is a knowledge lecture from one of the Stella Matutina scripts that Rigardi didn't have anything to do with this one. This is from Torrance. In this short account of the tree, the abridgment of the arrangement of the spheres has been in three triangles, each one a reflection of the next. They can be arranged in other ways, the three pillars of severity, mercy on the outside, with the pillar of mildness or balance in the middle. This is the arrangement which gives the foundation of the middle pillar exercise, in which the aspirant relates himself to a visualization of a large colored tree and is thus enabled to call down the forces from above. A further arrangement, now listen to this carefully, a further arrangement is known as the lightning flash and is constructed by connecting the sephirot in order of numbers, and this is known as the descent of power or the flaming sword. Now, neither Falcon nor Rigardi went the final step. Rigardi almost did. Now, we'll show you when we get into Rigardi's version of this. We will demonstrate to you how Rigardi came. He came almost to the point of doing it, of completing the whole system. But we'll save that for a little bit. Now, let's talk about Rigardi's version of this. Rigardi joined the Golden Dawn in the 1920s, and this was after he had, spent his time as a young man being secretary to Aleister Crowley, and so then he joined the Golden Dawn in the United States, and he went through all the way up to 5-6, and then he, according to his report, he realized that so many of these documents that were supposed to be available were being lost or being otherwise deleted from the program, and he became very concerned about this, and so he felt justified in publishing everything he could get a hold of the Stella Matutina scripts in two volumes, and did a very, very nice job of it. And he felt very guilty about it, and many times he thought, oh, gosh, I shouldn't have done this, and he told me, a couple of times, he says, oh, I wish I never had published it. But actually, the truth is that, yes, he should have, because otherwise what he was talking about may very well have happened. Although, and over in New Zealand, they were being very quiet about it, but they were preserving virtually everything over there, but Rigardi had no way of knowing that. Maybe they would have eventually stepped in and reconstructed the original, well, at least the original Stella Matutina. But Rigardi didn't know that. He knew that in America it was being, watered down and disempowered to the point where if it didn't get published, it wouldn't be preserved. Now, one of the things, of course, about this was that once he published it, he sort of became the spokesperson for it. And this middle pillar exercise, which had been just briefly described, he became fascinated with this. And so he started working with it and doing it. And at the time, now, this is, he published in 1932, he published The Art of True Healing, which is the essential, book, or it's a very small little thing, you can't hardly call it a book, but that's the essential work that describes the middle pillar. It's called The Art of True Healing. And he published this in 1932. Now, at that time, Francis Rigardi was very much into Jungian analytical psychology. Francis Rigardi was an ardent Jungian at that time. Now, the original documents related, Rigardi's original documents relating to his work on the middle pillar are very Jungian. Now, Rigardi later on, and I know this personally because I knew Rigardi, and I'm not going to say I was one of his students because he and I had a difference of opinion about Curley. And I didn't want to follow some of Curley's things, and at the time, that was where Rigardi was at the time. This was early 1970s. And so I won't call myself one of Rigardi's students, but I knew him, and I think I knew him. I probably know him better than a lot of people who go around, you know, saying they knew him, but whatever. But I did. I knew him rather well. And Rigardi was an ardent Jungian at that time. But when I got, you know, with him in the 1971, 1972, 1973, at that point he was out of Jung. He had turned his back on Jung, and he was trying to kind of unwind his Jungian associations. He was more into Reich. I'm not going to say he was that much into Freud, but he was more into Reich, and he was trying to get away from Jung. So I asked him one time about his middle pillar book, and he said, no. Just read it in the Golden Dawn, do it that way. Something I need to explain about that. Rigardi was a genius, and Rigardi has done more for modern magic than he's done as much for modern magic as Crowley, and I think in a lot of ways he's done more for modern magic in a positive sense than Crowley, because Crowley, of course, was a genius, and Crowley brought magic into the modern world, and Crowley made magic something that people could, who was of intellect and education and culture could appreciate, and we owe that to Crowley. But at the same time, Crowley had his problems and had his whatevers, and some of the orientations that Crowley came up with were just not something that a lot of people, even well-educated people, don't want to get into. And so I think Rigardi, in many ways, contributed just as much to magic as today as Crowley did. And at the time, Rigardi was doing his best writing and doing his best work. He was an ardent Jungian. Now, I have to admit, I like Carl Jung too, but here's the thing that we have to understand about. Since 1932, after World War II, Rigardi's writings have been rewritten and edited and messed with, and Rigardi himself was backing up on Jung. Now, after World War II, I think most of us that are aware of this, we know that Carl Jung was a giant of psychology and philosophy before World War II. After World War II, Carl Jung got discredited and just written out of Jungian psychology, analytical psychology, was relegated to the status of a cult. Why is this? Well, it isn't because Jung's analytical psychology isn't valid. It certainly is. And it isn't that Jung isn't one of the great pillars of psychological philosophy and modern philosophy, whatever. He is. The reason is that Jung was tarred with the Nazi sympathizer stick. And because of that, Jung's writings are not given the consideration they should be. And that's unfortunate, but that's the case. And so, Rigardi, and I think, personally, and I'm not going to, you know, you can disagree with me, but I think Rigardi turned his back on Jung because of peer pressure and because that was the way things were going. Jung, you know, was psychological establishment was just bound determined they weren't going to have anything more to do with Jung. So Rigardi went the same way, and more into Reich, and you know, I'm not going to criticize because he was a professional, he was a chiropractor, he was working in with other academics or whatever, and that's the way things were. So the early writings, the early middle pillar. Rigardi is quoting Jung at some length, and he's using Jungian interpretation. Now, just, you know, for those of you who don't understand Jung, anyway, what we need to do is we need to have a show here on Blog Talk Radio. We need to have on the Hermetic Hour an episode in which we discuss Carl Jung's psychology and philosophy in relation to Hermetic magic, which is very, very closely. It's Carl Jung's psychological philosophy is, frankly, it validates Hermetic magic in the modern sense, and it does. And so, therefore, it's very important to it. But that's for a later time. We'll get into it. But just to briefly, summarize it, that Carl Jung suggested that we inherit far more than just a blank slate. We're not born with a blank slate. We have a cultural inheritance. And we have more. We're not just born, this idea that Helvetius and Rousseau and the Illuminati and all the rest of them, you know, but all human beings are born completely equal. They're all blank slate, and environment is everything. That's not true, and we all know that now. But there's a tremendous desire on the part of scientific reductionalists to kind of validate this. And Jung stood solidly against that, whereas Freud is more in that area. You know, hey, we're just a bunch of animals, and we're moved by our urges and this, that, and the other thing. So the pure scientist prefers that, even though he may be a good person, but he still prefers that idea because then he doesn't complicate it with all this philosophy and all this culture. Doesn't complicate things. Well, it's got to complicate things because it is. You know, like we... You know, Noam Chomsky shot down Skinner, and rightly so, and Jung should be reestablished, but we won't because he doesn't fit with what these people would like. They'd like to support B.F. Skinner and all of that if they could, but from a magical point of view, Carl Jung's collective unconscious, archetypes in the collective unconscious are very, very important. Now, this is very, very much in Rigardi's writings before World War II. Now, what I want to do is I want to suggest to you that there's a couple of books here. In 1991, a fellow by the name of Mark Allen, Classic Wisdom Collection, republished The Art of True Healing, which has the middle pillar exercise in it. And Mark Allen took it upon himself to edit out a lot of the Jungian material and simplify and whatever. So that's a version of the middle pillar, which is, you know, it's all right, but it doesn't... it doesn't have the original version. Now, Chick and Tabitha Cicero have a version of The Middle Pillar out, which I frankly have not read. I read some of the reviews on it, and the reviews seem to indicate that they've made some changes and edited. I don't know. I like Chick and Tabitha. They're very knowledgeable, and I have read it, and maybe it's good, and maybe it is, but the reviews indicate that some changes have been made and some editing has been made. So, where do we get the original? Now, way back in 1970, Rigardi had a version of The Middle Pillar, which was also subtitled in the Jungian mode, and you know that one's virtually unobtainable. So, where do we get the originals on this? Where do we find them? Well, we're fortunate because a British publisher, Aeon Books, has now come out with, and it's available, and I just got a copy from Amazon, called Foundations of Practical Magic, An Introduction to Kabbalistic, Magical, and Meditative Techniques by Israel Rigardi. This is got the original stuff. And it has, not only does it have The Art of True Healing in its original form, but it also has Rigardi's wonderful article on meditation that is just loaded with good Jungian analogies and it is really one of the finest. In fact, this Foundations of Practical Magic book is a treasure. It's just a treasure. If you really want to understand this whole process, you should read it. And let me now let's discuss alternatives to the middle pillar exercise and how that comes around. Because as soon as you get into this discussion with certain people, and you say, well, they're doing the middle pillar and all of that, and then they're saying, oh, well, that's not the way to do it. Now, Paul Case, who also was in the American Stella Matutina, Golden Dawn. Paul Case, who was in the other center, he was in Chicago, and he was working with, and he was a kid in his 20s and working with Walter Atkinson, William Walker Atkinson, in the Chicago occult magazine. Case joined the American Golden Dawn, and Case was fascinated with the tarot. And tarot was his big thing. Now, Case was did not have a what you'd call a college education. Case was an autodidacte, very, very well educated in his own way, but somewhat unevenly. And Case became convinced, I don't blame him on this because Mathers, I think, thought the same way, that Eliphas Levy could do no wrong, and that Eliphas Levy was absolutely right about the tarot, that the tarot preceded the Kabbalah. That was Eliphas Levy's idea. And therefore, the tarot was the key to the whole thing, which was, here again, Eliphas Levy's idea. And therefore, the tarot, which the Golden Dawn related to the paths of the Tree of Life, not the spheres now, the paths, said that the paths of the Tree of Life were more important than the spheres themselves. This was Case's perspective. And this is, it's a valid perspective. I'm not criticizing Case in this respect. Because the paths are active and the spheres are, they're there, but the paths get you there. So the paths are tremendously important, and the tarot is tremendously important. But the tarot did not precede the Kabbalah. That's not true. So the spheres, spheres are very, very important. And the spheres relate more to the chakras, or to a chakra concept, than the Pats do, but then Case didn't see it that way. Case took the planetary attributes of the Pats, and he used that as a basis for establishing a chakra system. Okay. Now, there are some of his associations and work out pretty well and actually correspond with the Hindu system. As they ended up putting Mars in the genitals, which is not so hot unless you got a lot of testosterone and you're a big macho guy. Maybe you might like that. I don't think the women are too fond of it. But this is okay because the Hindus do it too, and the Theosophists definitely did this when they messed around with the Eastern system. And you end up with in the East, of course, they also, because they breathe, you know, they breathe in pranayama, and they have, because they breathe in the power rather than symbolically bring it down, you know, through the crown. Because they breathe in the power, they have the moon and the sun and the moon and two sun, either side of their head, and that's the sun breath and the moon breath, and that's why we do all this in the Eastern system, why you do all this business of plugging your nose up on one side, you know, and snorting and down on, you know, the other side and all of that, because you got the sun and moon breath, and you got the sun and the moon on either side of the head. So Case did that. And so he had some Eastern correspondences, which actually did work out. So I'm not saying the Case system is invalid. It'll work. You can work the Case system. But the problem with the Case system is that you can't bring down power in one nice straight line. You can't bring this power down. This is not a system. Case's system is not something you can use for a ritual. It's not something you can use for as part of your magical procedure. It just isn't. You have to work these things up one at a time and differently, and they're not in sequence, and they're set up on this path basis. Now, here again, I'm not discrediting a lot of people in the Case, you know, tradition. They use them, and it works. And there's a book on it if you want to read it, called The Tower of Alchemy. Yeah, it's by a fellow by the name of Griffith, I think. And it's good. And you know, this is valid. This will work. But it's not the middle pillar. And it's kind of a takeoff on the Eastern system. And in this sense, you can do it. Yeah, it'll work. But the point that we want to make, though, is that the middle pillar is a working system. It really does work, and it's been used over and over and over again. Case didn't like it, of course, but it is. It's been used. It establishes beyond any doubt that you can bring down the power from above. Right down through the middle pillar, and it will energize you, and it will act as healing energy. It will act as, it will empower you. It is a tremendously effective system, and there's no doubt about this, because thousands of people have used it, and it works out beautifully. Now, here's where we get into the final touch on this thing. Rigardi did not take the final step. And the final step in this process would have been for him to take the lightning flash and say, all right, why not just go ahead and come right down, straighten out the lightning flash, straighten out the flaming sword, and then we will have a complete chakra system. Complete. We won't have to go over to the shoulders. We won't have to go over to the pillars or anything like that. We'll have all of them there. Now, he didn't do this. I think probably it occurred to him that maybe he ought to, but he never did get around to doing this. And then by the time he would have gotten around to doing it, by that time he was, he was into other things, and he was turned his, kind of turning away from Jung. Now, let me point out, though, that Rigardi in The Art of True Healing, in the original version now, and of course in the later, and this is even in the later Mark Allen version of it too, Rigardi sets it up. He sets up this whole thing. He sets it up in this respect. He goes down, after describing all of the system and how to work it and how to do it and everything else, then he has, using the astrological structure, and he says, first of all, let me preface my further remarks by stating that from the practical point of view, the rudiments of the astrological schema are of untold value in that they offer a concise classification of the broad division of things. And I'm not concerned here with astrology as such, merely that it is convenient to use its schema. Its roots are in the seven principal ideas or planets to which most ideas and things may be referred. To each of these root ideas, there is attributed a positive and negative color, a divine name for the purpose of vibration, and I propose naming the planets with their principal attributions as follows. And then he goes down: Saturn, Jupiter, Mars, Sun, Venus, Mercury, Moon. Now, what he is saying here is that this is, or should be, the completed system. But he does not go the extra step. He does not tell you, as Belkin had said in the ritual, that the lightning flash is also the descent of power. Now, in 1975, and that was after, in 1975, Rigardi was, and I were, yeah, we're kind of, I hadn't seen him quite a while at that point. In 1975, I was at Northridge, and not quite in the graduate program yet, but I was at Northridge taking anthropology, getting close to the graduate school. And I was taking class in Kabbalah from Rabbi Kramer at that time. And I was walking across the campus thinking about Kabbalah and thinking about the middle pillar and thinking about, you know, this sort of thing. And all of a sudden, I walked across the campus and the sun was shining down. And bam, it hit me, the lightning flash. Wow. What if we straightened out the lightning flash, and what if we put all these planets, we ended up just like old Gitzel had done in his drawing way back in the 17th century. What would happen? Woo, boy. So I, you know, that night I sketched it up, and then I started working it. And I started working it, and oh boy. And I realized that, because I've been doing the middle pillar, not exactly regularly, but I've been doing it a bunch. And so I did this new one, and extended it out, and it worked. It worked as well as the middle pillar, because it had all the middle pillar power to it, but it was the full system, and it was complete. And we had all the planets. We could put all the gods on them. And we could do everything that we could do with the Hindu system or the Tibetan system, you can do with this, with the middle pillar. It's just, all you got to do is just, as I said, is just straighten out that lightning flash. Bing, 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 bing. Well, of course, naturally, it worked out beautifully. Joe Wilson, I told him about it, and we got going with it. Joe said, "Hey, Pope, you can use that for Galatia. Oh boy, you can get down." And I said, "Yeah, you're right, Joe. We can do that." So we amplified our goetic operation, where the magus could stand behind or sit behind the receiver and just run those psychic centers up and down, and wherever, whatever planet you were, whatever sphere you were working in, you center on that one, and the receiver could do the same thing while you're doing it, and this amplified and intensified the goitic operations. So, and you know, and we would do this. So we would do this before every operation that we do. We would do this, and down to the sphere that we would be working, and then we'd amplify that sphere. So whenever you do a magical operation, and the beautiful thing about this system is that you can do it rapidly. It isn't like the other system where you would have to, you'd have to sit in meditation on each one of these things and, you know, and move up very soon. This thing, you can do this whole master ritual in as quickly as you could do with the middle pillar. And this means that you can use it for a ceremonial operation. And this means that you can do it in a group. And it works out beautifully. But without the middle pillar, without Rigardi's work on the middle pillar, we never would have been able to do this. I don't think I ever would have been. So we owe, with the full Western psychic center system, we owe this to Falcon first, and then certainly to Rigardi. And I cannot, as I said, I cannot recommend highly enough. I can't recommend this Foundations of Practical Magic by Rigardi too highly. I think this is a marvelous book, and that everybody should get a hold of it. Now, you need to realize that what this does is it brings down the celestial light through four dimensions: Azaluth, Bria. As you're coming down to Azaluth, that's King Scale, and you're coming down to Azaluth, all right? And then you come back up in Bria, and then you go into Yzera, and then you're going to project it outward to Ashia. Okay, so we're working all four dimensions, whereas now, of course, I'm going to defer to the theosophists in this regard, but the Hindu system is essentially etheric. Our system is essentially astral. So if somebody bothers you and you want to do the Western system and they say, oh, that's not the way the chakras really are, we just tell them, come on, that's an etheric system. We're doing an astral system. You know, and that ought to stump them right there. But the other thing too that I want to mention while I'm at it here, you may get a little confused when you get into the Art of True Healing and the middle pillar Art of True Healing. Rigardi has some colors assigned to the five centers of the middle pillar that he's using. You might want to disregard those colors because they're compromised. He wanted to get the four elements of the four worlds and into the color scheme descending. Now, the reason why he did that was because he only had those five centers to work with, and he's descending four worlds, and he wants to get all four elements in there. So, consequently, he makes his compromise. So he ends up with Tiphereth being red. Well, that's not good. But it's a compromise, you know, and you can see why he did it, but you don't want to do that. Tiphereth is golden, and it should be, and that's, in the Eastern system, Western system, whatever, it should be golden. And that's one example. There are several other examples. But so realize that those colors that he assigns are essentially a compromise in that respect. So once you fill out the whole system with the lightning flash, you fill out the whole system, then use the colors of the Menudum Mundum. Which are proper. And also, too, and here again, you're going to run into these people and say, well, such and such is not that color, you know, the traditional Hindu color is such and such.
just remember, magical color is what we impose upon something. It is not what something is. So if you want to scry that color, if you want to scry that color, and it could be any color they want, but what we impose on it is the magical color. Now, this is something that this is very hard to get across to some people, but this is it. So consequently, stay with the regular traditional Golden Dawn color scheme. I mean, this is what we use, and this is it, and it works. Believe me, it will work. Now, as far as gods are concerned, the Golden Dawn has, and I did a Golden Dawn version of this, of the Lightning Flash version, of the full version of the Middle Pillar. And I did a Golden Dawn god assignments. Now, for those of you that are into Egyptian mythology, you might not be terribly happy with the way the Golden Dawn has attributed gods. Now, you know, Egyptian gods, the Egyptians had a god for just about everything, and they had, and again, you got to realize that ancient Egypt and modern Egypt, too, you only have three seasons, you don't have four seasons, and you only have High Nile, Low Nile, Middle Nile, and so consequently, their correspondences are not the same as they are in Palestine and in Southern California. And in Palestine and Southern California, the correspondences correspond to the Kabbalah. But in ancient Egypt, they don't. So you have the different Egyptian gods don't fit Kabbalistically as well as the Canaanite god forms, which we use, or the Greek. You can even do better with the Greek gods. But the Egyptian gods, you're going to have to do a little jockeying around. You know, like, I would put Osiris in Tiberath, but the Golden Dawn prefers Amon in Tiberath, and they put Osiris in Malkuth. Well, okay, there's justification for that. There's some other assignment, but however, if you're going to work the Golden Dawn system, you probably should use the god forms that the Golden Dawn does use as god forms in the temple. Now, you'll find those in Skinner's Skinner's magical tables, and in the Golden Dawn, you have the proper Egyptian god forms to use in the different spheres. Now, Rigardi also has a book on Egyptian gods and the Tree of Life, so you might want to dig that up too. Now, also too, you have archangels attributed to all seven spheres and planets, and so if you don't want to use pagan gods, and I don't know why you wouldn't, but if you don't, you know, you might want to stay if you're a Martinist or something like that. You know, you don't want to use those pagan gods. You can just use Christian archangels. And I suppose you can use Catholic saints if you want to, but whatever. But you need to fill out your psychic centers with the mythology that resonates with you and the mythology you can use. Now, remember, in magic, of course, Hermes said, "The gods of the zodiac are eternal, and man creates the gods of the earth sphere." So, have fun. Pick the gods that you like and stick them in there. Now, this gives you a tremendous advantage because, you know, you've got a whole bunch of gods a whole bunch of divinities that are working for you, and they're all inside you. And it's great. And, you know, and they can argue, but when you finally get up to Hesed, you know, then you have a god up there that'll straighten them all out. And I think that this is a wonderful, wonderful system. And the beautiful part about it is that you're bringing down the light. You're bringing down this tremendous, wonderful, in charge healing power that's going all through you that you can share. And when Rigardi wrote this book, he called it The Art of True Healing, because once you fill yourself with this river of light, you share it. You don't want to keep it all inside yourself. because the more you pass, the more you send this light out to others. The more you share it, the more power you have, and it flows through you, and it purifies you, and it charges you, and it also you can activate people's chakras. You know, in Beyond Lemuria, our science fiction movie, in Philo's, Merrick plays Philo's, and he heals this Leslie Pearson sitting in the wheelchair, you know, and he shows. He goes down the psychic centers and places his hand and heals Leslie, and he's been paralyzed, and he gets up. Well, it's just a movie, but this just, you know, it shows you what you could do with this power. And it's the power, it's positive. And this power is healing, it's energizing, and it's positive, and it is invigorating, and it is inspiring. And I think that it's one of the most important rituals that you can possibly do in magic. And so I want to encourage all of you to look into it. Well, if you don't want to do our whole complete lightning flash hermetic caduceus that we do, at least do the middle pillar the way Riccardi has written it. But do it in the original. Get the original book. Get the original, the one that I'm recommending here. And we didn't publish it now. This is from England. It's called Foundations of Practical Magic: An Introduction to Kabbalistic, Magical, and Meditative Techniques by Israel Riccardi, published by Aeon Books. And I think you will really, 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 and you read the whole book. I mean, don't just read The Art of True Healing and Meditation. It's just, it's a wonderful book. And it makes me wish that somehow or other I had known Riccardi maybe a few years before somebody talked him out of Carl Jung. But then again, on the other hand, I treasure my friendship with him anyway, and he was one of the great magicians of the 20th century, no doubt about it. Okay, that's next week. We will have another show, and I said sooner or later we have to do. Carl Jung and the Hermetic tradition. We're going to have to do that. That's one we have to do, but not next week, because I got to read. Before I do that, I got to reread more Jung before I try that one. Okay. Anyway, have a good evening, and we'll see you next week. And meanwhile, good magic.